listening to an archival KABU radio show from the tape vaults. Times, dates, and events heard on this recording are no longer relevant or have already occurred in the past.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
Good morning. You're listening to Pacific Underground on KABU Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and so we are doing a rerun. Until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kabu.org or message us on Instagram at @PACUnderground.
Hi friends, you're tuned in to Pacific Underground, a show by and for the Asian and Pacific Islander community. My name is Kat Batuigas, and I'm your producer and host for this show. We're talking tech today. For the show, we've invited Vaidehi Joshi, Portland resident and software engineer. Vaidehi is co-host of the Base CS podcast, that's base.cs. And it's a show that helps you learn computer science concepts in a fun and accessible way. Vaidehi and I chat about how she got started in tech, her thoughts on tech diversity and education, and her favorite summer in Portland things. Thanks for tuning in to KBOO Portland.
Well, my name is Vaidehi. I can confirm this is the truth. I am a software engineer based in Portland. I've been here for about a year and a half or so, and I love it. I work at a small software consultancy called Tilda, and we are a consultancy, but we also get to do a very cool thing where we build our own product, and we work on a product called Skylight, which is a Rails. This is going to get real technical. I don't know if anyone wants to hear this.
No, go for it.
It's a Rails profiler. It's very cool. We're a very performance-minded group of engineers, just like a handful of us. But it's a fun place to work. When I'm not working on performance tools at my job, I'm also writing a lot or podcasting. I have a weekly writing series that I did last year called Base CS, and it was basically this project where I decided that I was going to teach myself computer science, and I do not have a degree in computer science, but I wanted to learn it anyway, so I did this weekly project for a whole year where I like wrote about some computer science concept, and then that project got turned into a podcast, which I also host in my free time. And between those two things, I don't have that much free time, but yeah, I've tried to find a way to balance technical things with creative things. And so far, I think I've done an okay job.
Cool. So for a little bit of background for our listeners, at my day job, I work at a technology company, and I'm also teaching myself a little bit about coding and web development. And as one of the resources that I like to refer to, I guess, in my sort of learning journey, there is a podcast called Code Newbie that I initially started listening to, I think, maybe 1 or 2 years ago. And it was through that podcast that I came across the podcast that Vaidehi co-hosts with Saron, who is the host of the Code Newbie podcast. So this is how our paths crossed, which is really cool. Thank you, internet. And now Vaidehi is on our show. She's very, very kindly agreed to spend a little bit of time with us today. So thank you, Vaidehi. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's been a long Well, not a long time, but it's been like a couple months since we recorded. We just finished season 2 of the Base CS podcast in like, I don't know, February or something. So it's been a while since I've been in front of a mic, and I'm like, oh, I'm not as rusty as I thought I was. So this is good. It's just like going to the gym after not going to the gym for 3 months.
Awesome. So anyway, I wanted to reach out to you, Vaidehi, because I just thought it might be really interesting for us and for our listeners to learn more about you and feature you on our show. For those of you who don't know, the Base CS podcast, hosted by Vaidehi and Saran, the two hosts are women of color in tech, and they are developers and coders themselves. And so I thought it was very interesting to see these two women, you know, host a technical podcast. They cover technical concepts, computer science concepts, and them being at the intersection of technology and, I guess, education, but also being women of color in tech and in audio. I just thought, wow, I have to somehow reach out to to these folks, and poked around the internet, poked around social media, found out that Vaidehi was actually based in Portland. So here we are.
Oh, that's funny. So you didn't actually know I was based. I thought you would have like been like, oh, she's based in Portland. I guess I don't really talk about it that much. That's just a happy coincidence.
Yeah, no, I think I just started following you on Twitter, and then I realized, or maybe I saw a tweet perhaps that sort of referred to Portland in some way, and I was like,
that's probably,
oh, wow,
talking about the rain.
Oh,
and
potentially.
And asking when it was going to stop.
So are you, so you're not from Portland?
I am not, no. I was originally born in India, and my parents immigrated here when I was 2 or 3, I think. But I was raised in Richmond, Virginia, which is the capital of the Confederacy back when that was a thing. But I wanted to get out of there pretty much like as soon as I could. So I went to the most diverse metropolitan place that I could think of, which is New York City. So I went to school there. I lived there for a while, lived abroad. I taught abroad for a while and like just spent a year like learning languages. And then I came back to New York, and I was interested in technology through very odd, circuitous paths. And that's where I learned how to code. I learned how to code at this school called the Flatiron School, which is based in Manhattan. And then I got a job and pretty much stayed on the East Coast for a couple of years while I was working in tech. And then I heard about, well, I'd heard about Tilda for a while, and then I just kind of was like, well, this is a reason for me to move. I don't know if I would want to move that far if it wasn't like a company I was excited about. And then it worked out, and then I was like, all right, I guess I'm going to the other side of the country where I have never really been, nor do I know anything about. But it worked out, I think. I've handled the rain okay.
So you moved out here, and you hadn't visited before, didn't know anyone.
Didn't know anybody, no, not really. I had visited for a conference for like 4 days, or maybe like a week, something like that. I don't think I'd ever spent more than a week in the Pacific Northwest, and I was like, yeah, sure, I'll move.
Was it for a tech conference by any chance?
Yeah, it was. It was a tech conference that I was speaking at a couple years ago, and it was like March, so it was like proper Portland spring, but there were a couple sunny days, and I was like, this isn't that bad. I could do Portland. I didn't mind it when I went the one time. So I was like, I'll probably move. It's fine. I was just very over New York by that point. So I was like, Portland seems like the opposite of New York. So I'm going to pick up my whole life and move over there.
Let's talk a little bit more about how you got to doing what you do. Mm-hmm. So you mentioned that you were interested in technology and you learned coding with the Flatiron School. Were you doing anything different before that?
So yeah, I think I was doing, I worked for a bit as I was a sixth grade teacher while I was living abroad, because I'm very interested in education, and my degree was in literature. Specifically, I was interested in writing, and I was like, oh, I'm gonna live abroad and like, you know, go out into the world and like be a journalist and like report, you know, on things that are actually happening. And then I was like a freelance writer for a bit, and all of that taught me that being a freelance writer, especially living abroad, when you're like, I don't know what I'm doing, I'm just writing stuff and hoping people like it. It's not that sustainable. It's great if that's what you want to do and you can make it work, But I was just like, I need something that people are going to pay me to do. So yeah, but before I even got to that point mentally, when I was working as a freelance writer, when you pitch to magazines and like websites and stuff online, editors will always be like, send us your portfolio, and it would be great if you could send us some pieces. Ideally, just send us, you know, your website. And I was like, oh, well, I don't have a website. I've been sending you links. Is that not okay? But anyways, I started looking at other writers who had been published on the same platforms, and they had all these, you know, Squarespace-type websites. Actually, I don't even know if Squarespace was a thing back then, but equivalent websites. And I was like, oh, well, they have these. Like, I'm sure I could just, you know, whip one up. It can't be that bad. Everybody else has one. And so I was like, oh, I'll just, like, you know, make a little website. It doesn't have to be beautiful, just something that I can send them. And then I was like, well, let me do this one more thing. And let me do this other thing. And let me figure out how to get this thing to spin. And how do I get these colors to change? And then I just, like, got very sucked into it. And it was kind of a nice excuse to just explore, because I did have an end goal, but it really wasn't even about what I was, you know, trying to do. It was more that I was like, oh, I'm actually curious about this. And I had fun with it. And it was just like being able to play as an adult, which is kind of fun, with something that you aren't familiar with, but you're also not scared of. But that's how I kind of got into teaching myself how to code. And I did that for a while. And my dad is actually, he's worked in technology for like more than 30 years. And he was like, you know, you could learn a backend language to supplement what you're doing. And like, you know, you could have like a career doing this. And I was like, don't programmers just sit in big server rooms? Like, that seems boring. Like, I don't think that's, are you sure people pay a lot of, like, pay you to do this thing as a real career? And he was like, yeah, you should just learn, just keep doing. And like, he was like, oh, like, learn this framework and just try it out. And I went to like a workshop, and I was just like doing it for fun. And I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. I can like build a blog engine now. I can like build this little website that doesn't do anything very fancy, but it's still kind of cool. And that's kind of how I fell into it. And that's when I was like, okay, I'm going to like do this more seriously. And I'm going to like spend a few months in New York and spend money and like go and learn this as a career.
And so before getting interested in it and sort of starting teaching yourself how to code, did you have any sort of prior background in technology at all? I mean, I don't know, just, I feel like a lot of people that I've, you know, sort of heard or listened to their stories about how they got into tech, a lot of them went way back and said, oh, Neopets, LiveJournal, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. MySpace, figuring out HTML mm-hmm. and all of that sort of stuff. So I was just wondering if you had a similar story.
I definitely had a LiveJournal. I also, like, I'm pretty sure at some point, I don't remember how I did this, because I don't remember how you even set it up back then, but there was like, I had a GeoCities website, because those were really easy to make. When I was in high school, I was like, we didn't have a school paper, and I was like, we should just have one. And everybody was like, you can't, where, how are you going to start that? And I was like, we'll just do it online. And I just like did like simple HTML. So I was like kind of familiar with it, because I was like, oh, this is just like GeoCities. This is just like changing colors on LiveJournal. Like, it's not that hard. It won't be like, it doesn't have to be beautiful, but like, it's a thing that people can use. So I kind of played with it, but I didn't understand like the technical aspects of it. I just understood very much like, you know, the surface level. And the surface level of it was really fun for me. But I don't think if I hadn't been like, oh, this is kind of fun, I would have never asked the questions of like, wait, how does this work? Because that's like kind of what hooked me into keep going. Otherwise, I probably would have been content to just be like, oh, this is fine.
So it kind of sounds like you got a lot of encouragement and support from your parents to pursue this. Do you think that if, you know, let's say your dad hadn't said, oh, like, just look into this one thing, this one framework, do you think you would have pursued it as enthusiastically as you did?
Probably not. I think I would have, I think I might have kept going with it, but I might not have ever known what you can do with it. And I think that there's like a propensity to kind of taper out when it comes to interest. And it's the same with education. So like when I used to teach, for example, like algebra or like, I don't know, science, you can like teach a concept and it's like, okay, cool, I like understand this, but why, like the beauty of it doesn't really make sense until you can see it like applied. So because he pushed me to like learn this framework, I was like, oh wait, this is how like Airbnb works, and this is how Twitter works, and like these are the same concepts. And I didn't even know, you know, the half of it, but I was starting to see like the more technical sides of it because it was diving into the back end of how things worked. And like changing colors was fine, but like I did not understand the spectrum of what software really is and what it can do and how it can impact change until I started being able to see how those things can be applied to actual solutions to real problems that I was seeing. Because for a long time I was like, I don't know why, you know, why would I want to get into software? Because I didn't know that it's like it is a tool set to build things. Like that was something that it took me a long time to learn. So I'm really glad that he pointed me towards that framework, because I just started building stuff with it, and I was like, oh, if I can build this thing, then I can probably build something else, and I can probably build something else like this. And that was just like a domino effect.
Good morning. You are listening to Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kboo.org or message us on Instagram at pacunderground.
So that kind of leads me into two sort of separate trains of thought. And so I think maybe the first that I want to pursue right now is, so diversity in tech, it's a thing. A lot of people are talking about it. We talk about it constantly. I know that there's been real sort of steps taken and we've made some real progress. But I think the one thing that as an Asian woman in this industry, the one thing that stands out to me is kind of, as someone who identifies as Asian, I'm not necessarily someone who's well represented in the industry. But I think what a lot of people imagine about Asians is that, oh yeah, there's a lot of you in the tech industry, right? Microsoft, all that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. So what's the big deal? And I'm like, it is a big deal. Mm-hmm. And people like me don't necessarily feel like, you know, we we're represented, that we belong, that we you know, we have a right to be here. Mm-hmm. And so I'm just wondering, I want to ask you if any of that ever came into play as you were starting your journey in tech?
Yeah, it's a really big topic that everybody seems to have a view on, and some people take actionable steps to do things about it, and other people don't. But I guess for me, I don't know that I actually had any conversations with anybody where they explicitly said to me, aren't you like well represented in tech? But I did have like subtle moments where people were like, oh, well, you must have like a CS degree, right? Like you must, you work in, you know, you work in this at this company and you give these conference talks. Like, I guess like you must have done this the whole time. And I'm like, actually, no, I switched careers. And I did something completely different before. And I don't have a CS degree. And in my opinion, I don't actually need one. And I don't know, there's a little bit of an element, I think, and I think the reason I'm bringing it up is because when you think about those, you know, Asians who work at those large companies, that people are like, oh, they're already at Microsoft or they're already at Google. A lot of them do fall into a certain subset, you know, where a lot of them are male. A lot of them have computer science or engineering degrees. And it's like, for some people, I think that, you know, checks off boxes of like diversity, but that's not really diversity because all of them will likely have the same experience if they're all checking off the same boxes. So for me, I do kind of feel that there are a lot of assumptions made because of the fact that I talk about computer science, but I don't have a CS degree. And like, I give conference talks, but people don't realize that I didn't get a PhD in, like, you know, distributed systems. And I think sometimes people assume that, which I'm like, that's fine, but, like, challenge why you assume that. And, you know, are your assumptions because of what I look like? Or are your assumptions even valid? Do I need to get a PhD in these things to be able to talk intelligently about them and, you know, explain them to other people and get people excited about them? But yeah, I like that's specifically speaking towards like being a South Asian woman in the tech industry. But then I also like encompass these other fields of like being kind of self-taught or being from a different like career background. I didn't like studying a different topic, studying a different field altogether, and like having a whole range of life experiences that are not software, which definitely I think I used to think put me in the minority, but as I have stayed in the industry longer, I'm like, oh wait, there are a lot of people that are like this. Their voices just aren't being well represented or heard, I think, sometimes.
Well, I am really glad you're around and that the BaseyS podcast is around. You know, it's inspiring. It's something that makes me feel like, yeah, you know, I can do this. Someone like me mm-hmm. can do this, and that we do actually have, we deserve to be here. Like, we don't have to feel like, you know, that we're imposters mm-hmm. or that, you know, oh, we're here through some fluke.
Yeah.
Vaidehi's right here. Shout out to Vaidehi for doing what she does. The other thing that came to mind as you were talking about the way that you'd sort of learned and gotten curious, more curious about technology was, and you mentioned you were a teacher as well. Mm. How would you say you approach teaching, whether it's, you know, like a computer science concept, something that you sort of cover on BaseyS or your blog or through your writing, or, you know, even back to when you were teaching before you were in tech, do you have like a certain approach, and do you feel like the way that you'd learned development, are any of those sort of interconnected or have impacted one or the other? Does that question make sense?
Yeah, totally. That's a great question, because I've been reflecting a lot on this recently, because I think somebody, like I gave a talk, I keynoted Rust Fest recently, earlier this summer in Paris, and I gave a talk on like learning how to learn. So I was like, in preparation for that talk, I was like thinking a lot. I was like, how do I learn? I need to get up and talk about how I do this. So I've been reflecting a lot on that recently. And I think especially after spending a year of teaching yourself new things, you kind of learn like what works for you and what doesn't. And then you translate that to teaching other people. And it's like, well, how do I convert this idea into something that I don't know, into something I know, into something that will be understandable to others? It's very much like it's a long thread to follow. But to answer your question, I think there is a strategy that I think I use. I didn't realize that I used it. I only came across the strategy recently, but I'll basically tell you what I do when I learn, which is that I have a notebook next to me, and I started doing this when I was in tech more, you know, ferociously, but I think I've always kind of done this, where when I encounter something that I don't know, or somebody says something that I'm like, I don't know what that means, or I like need to look that up, or like that's something new for me, something I don't know about, I'll just write it down. So I did this for my very, very first dev job when I was working at a software studio a few years ago. And I was like, it was my first job where someone was paying me to write code. And I was like, I can't believe someone's doing this. I don't know what I'm doing, but they're paying me to be here somehow. But I would just keep this notebook. And anytime anybody would say anything, like they would just use a term or like say something in passing, if I could get more information out of them, then I would. But sometimes I would just be like, oh, we're talking about this other thing. I'm just going to write it down. And then I would go and learn about all those things systematically. And sometimes they wouldn't make sense. And I would just keep them in that book. And sometimes, like, 3 months later, I'd encounter that again, but in a different context. And I'm like, oh, that's what that was in reference to. And, like, you suddenly start filling in, like, you kind of start shading in these boxes of things you know, and it starts to interconnect. But the really cool thing about that strategy, I think, is that in the process of teaching yourself like these new ideas and like writing down as you're learning, you start to see what works and what doesn't work for you, so that when it comes time for you to teach it to other people, you've already gone through the process of learning. You know what it's like to learn it. So you know how you wish someone had explained it to you, or you know how, you know, the idea or the concept clicked in your head. So now you're even more equipped, especially if you're a beginner or if you're new to something, to teach it to someone else because you've just learned it. And I think this is really interesting in tech, especially because there are a lot of people who, you know, been doing this for 25 years and they're like, oh, I learned that back in college. But then if you ask them how it works, they'll give you a convoluted Wikipedia-esque answer and you're like, that's fine, but that did not help me. I don't know what that means. So I think being able to put yourself in the shoes of someone who's completely new, which is really great if the topic is new to you, equips you to be an even better teacher. And I think that's like, that's the case with education in general, where you might know, like, you might understand like what variables are in an algebraic equation, but like, how do you explain to somebody who has never encountered that before? Or like, you might understand what like forces or, you know, mass, but like just giving them a formula is not going to help. So you have to figure out other ways of like hooking them into the idea and introducing a concept in ways that will stick with them. And the interesting thing about that is everybody learns differently. So for me, like, I learned through writing. So I chose blog posts and, you know, illustrative drawings in order to learn. And that's what I use to teach other people. But some people learn through audio, which is why we took BaseCS to become a podcast, because we were like, you know, someone might not want to read a long 2,000 word article. They might want to just listen, and that's the way they digest information. And some people probably need both. And in those cases, we have a video series that kind of is catered towards them, where it's like you have somebody talking to you, you have illustrative drawings where I'm like actually drawing, you have definitions, like you have a mix of whatever works for you. So I think it's probably the best teachers I know and the most effective ways of teaching is a combination of like using different strategies, but then also being able to empathize with the person who's doing the learning. Because I think you can empathize, but if you can't take different approaches, you could hit a wall. But if you're like, oh, I can explain it to you in six different ways, like, let me explain, like, particle relativity. Is particle relativity a thing? I don't know.
I don't know.
Let's make up a thing called particle relativity and say I'm explaining to you. I'll explain it to you in nine different ways with drawings, but, like, if I can't bring it down to where you are in your learning journey, then it doesn't matter. Like, you need to be able to meet people where they are, where they're learning. So I think those are the two things I always try to keep in mind, whether I'm teaching, like, when I was teaching kids, or, you know, if I'm teaching someone random across the world, whoever could be reading a post or like listening to a podcast, it's that same intention that I try to set out with. But it's very, very hard to do, I think. It takes a lot of practice, and it's really unfortunate when people think like people who come around with the philosophy of those who can't do teach, and I'm like, actually, it's the people who can do it and then do some more who are the ones teaching effectively, at least. But it's interesting because Richard Feynman, he's like, you know, Nobel Prize winner, renowned physicist. He did so many, you know, great things for physics and for science in general. He had the strategy called the Feynman technique, and he did something similar. And I recently realized that I actually have been doing a lot of what he did, which is the strategy I was referring to earlier, where he had this notebook of things that he didn't know anything about, and he would just take a blank notebook, and he would just fill it with all the things he needed to learn more about. And then he would pick a topic, and then he would say, okay, what do I know about this? Okay, I know this and this. I know how these two ideas connect, but I don't know how they, you know, the things in between. So then he would go and learn all those things, and he would, like, go to the textbooks. He would go find resources. Like, he would talk to people who knew more about it. Once he got all that knowledge, he would come back and fill it in. And then he would try to explain that concept as if he was explaining it to a child. And in the process of explaining it, if he couldn't explain it simply, he would stop and be like, I don't actually know this, because if I can't explain it simply, I don't really understand it. And then he would stop and repeat the process again and be like, okay, I don't actually know, you know, how mass works. I can explain these other things simply, but like now I need to go and understand how it actually works so that I can distill it down. And I think that's what made him such a great teacher, but that's also what made him so, you know, smart and like able to give back to his community, because he actually understood things fundamentally, and then he was able to translate that and share it with other people, which I think a lot of people in academia can struggle to do, but It's definitely the case in tech. I think tech needs more explainers like Richard Feynman.
Listening to Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kboo.org or message us on Instagram at PacUnderground.
What I also find personally is that in tech, I personally think, and I don't know if this is true for everyone, but I personally think that there's a little bit of pressure to look like or seem like you know things.
Oh my God, yes.
And so, I mean, I think the whole idea of just writing things down and kind of breaking those down into smaller things or concepts and then relating those as much as you can as you go, I think that's brilliant. But then also, it doesn't occur to me that I can just do that, you know, mm-hmm. whenever someone's explaining something to me.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't occur to me that it's okay to say, you know what, I'm going to write that down.
Yeah.
It doesn't occur to me to do something other than just like nod and say, oh, okay, I think that makes sense, which is really what I, you know, usually end up doing. Although I go back later and think, oh, actually, I've forgotten what this person told me. I don't actually know what this whole thing is about.
Yeah, and of course you're going to forget because it's a lot of information, a lot of new information, and the human brain is not built to absorb all that. Like, they're not sponges in that way, you know? Like, you need, and also I think, like, you need the act of writing something down and the memory of what it was when you wrote it so that when you see it again next time, you're like, oh, yes, this was in reference to this other thing that, you know, was somewhat tangentially related. I think there's a lot of value in writing things down. I also think there's a lot of value for people who are the ones who have the knowledge, who are teaching, to be like, it's okay that you don't know. Like, reframing it from what I think currently happens in the tech industry, which is like this air of, you don't know what this thing is? Like, how did you get so far in this career without knowing? Versus, oh, you don't know? I get to be the one to explain it to you. This idea, I think the first time I heard it, there's a program in New York called the Recurse Center, and they have this idea of not feigning surprise, where when someone doesn't know something, you don't put them down or blame them for not knowing it, because everybody goes through life not encountering things. None of us know everything. So the moment that they, you know, tell you, I don't know this thing, bring them into that knowledge circle and like welcome them into it versus like making them feel shunned for not knowing it. Because I like guarantee you, if you turn the tables and talk to somebody who's been in software for 35 years about something completely unrelated and you were like, you don't know this thing, like they would not feel nice about it. So anyways, there's a lot of people who are changing that, but I think still inherently in the core of Silicon Valley and like a lot of these like very these larger tech companies that still do like whiteboarding interviews and who are very much like, if you don't have a CS degree, you can't do this. There's still a little bit of that going on, and I want to change it by being the first one to be like, I didn't know this. That's okay. And I'm learning it, and look, I know it at the end. So there you go. You can do it too.
I'm doing a little bit of a fist pump just to give you all a visual of what's going on in the studio. So since this is an audio show, it's a radio show, I also wanted to ask you a little bit about, in terms of conveying or teaching all of these concepts, but in an audio format, could you talk about the challenges that you face while doing that, and also some creative ways or strategies that you've taken to address those? Mm-hmm. I really want to hear this because this is so interesting to me.
Audio is hard. I think I don't even fully understand yet how hard it is, because our show is like, we're starting season 3 later this summer. So we haven't been doing it that long. We've done like 16 episodes. And a lot of the topics that we've covered, they're technical, but they're not even the most complex topics that we're gonna get into. So I'm a little bit nervous about how that's going to go. I'm sure it's going to be fine. I'm not going to think about it right now. But the ways that, you know, the strategies that have helped in terms of conveying concepts, especially technical concepts that generally are conveyed using visuals. It's asking a lot of questions and like having, you know, clarity on something. So the great part about this is that for the Base CS podcast, my co-host Saran, we kind of play like this back and forth where she's a little bit like the one that's she's in the shoes of the listener, where she's like, I don't actually know this thing. Like, I'm going to ask the question that probably everybody else is thinking, which most of the time they already are, and like ask clarifying questions to make sure that she's understood things and like kind of relate it to her own experience or draw comparisons to things that have happened previously in the episode or other episodes. So constantly asking questions and reinforcing ideas as you go along, I think, is especially important in a technical podcast, because sometimes you can get overwhelmed and be like, oh, I've not actually understood anything in the last 10 minutes. And you have to like rewind and be like, okay, what actually are we talking about? So it would not be the same show or a very good show if it was just me. Like, having her there to like balance me out and to ask the questions and to have a dialogue to be like, am I understanding this correctly? So is this basically right? That really, I think, is what makes the show what it is. But for me, in terms of being between the two of us, being more of the teacher and like explaining the concepts, I will try to explain one concept multiple ways in the hopes that if one explanation didn't make sense to someone, another one will. And I love using like visual metaphors. So one of my favorites, and the great thing is I didn't plan this. I just like came up with it the day we were recording. And I was like, yeah, let's go with it. We had one episode where we were talking about a data structure called a linked list. And how it was different from other data structures. And I was like kind of describing it, but I was like, I'm not really doing a good job. So I used a metaphor of like moving boxes in your apartment. And I was like, imagine you have boxes all over your apartment. And the only way you can find another box is there's a sticky note on the box. So you can't just find the last box, like box number 10. You have to start at box 1 and then find the sticky note, find the location of box 2, kind of like a weird scavenger hunt. And I was like, compare this to like stacking all 10 boxes in order by your front door. And I was like, there are times where stacking 10 boxes is good, and there are times where stacking 10 boxes in different places rather than in one place, like at the front door, is actually better. And then I was able to like draw a metaphor, and you can actually visualize that, right? Like everybody has, you know, probably most people have moved, but most people will be able to visualize that in their house, like boxes with sticky notes. So having a relatable metaphor that you can imagine while you're listening kind of helps make up for the lack of, you know, visual drawings, which are like kind of they've kind of become a crutch, because I'm like, oh, I know how I can explain it with that. So the podcast is it's like a weird way of like stretching my teacher legs, where I have to be like, okay, I can't draw. I can't just point to things. I can't just, you know, be like, oh, you know what I'm talking about. I have to figure out how to explain it with my hands tied behind my back and just like using my words and using my language and intonation of my voice. So it's a good challenge, but sometimes it can be tricky and you have to really think about it. And sometimes we'll record a podcast episode and like we'll stop in the middle And I'll be like, I don't actually think this is working. Like, let's reframe. Let me change what metaphor I'm using, and we'll re-record something because I really want it to be clear and digestible and understandable. Because if someone's going to listen to it for 20 minutes, I don't want them to get lost like in minute six. But yeah, that's a good question. I think there should be more technical educational podcasts so that people can help me solve this problem.
And so out of curiosity, how long does it take to produce and, you know, just like put together one episode?
Oh my gosh. I would have to ask my co-host because she does all the production stuff. But recording an episode, probably one episode is 20 minutes and we'll probably spend 10, 15 minutes talking about it. But the great thing is the content is already produced because it's all based on my blog series. So I don't have to come up with content. We just need to figure out how to turn the content into audio format, and like what we're gonna put in which episode and how to break it up and like what order and like how the, like we'll actually structure a narrative. So it's scripted, but then sometimes we'll kind of banter and go off script. But we do have like a narrative arc of like, we're gonna start with this and then talk about this and then talk about this. And then, so it's loosely scripted, but that helps because with technical stuff, if it's just like me talking for a long time, you could get so bored.
Oh, I love all of this because I'm currently at my job. One of the things that I do is documentation, and it's challenging. I mean, teaching technical just concepts and ideas, that's always been challenging, but also, I don't know, I guess there might be a sort of idea or impression that people have that documentation is like totally dry and you basically just write down steps to do things. Mm-hmm. But I mean, if you want to do a good job, it's really not that. It's, you know, putting yourself in the shoes of the learner or, mm-hmm. or reader, and trying to think of various ways or approaches that you want to explain something. So it's really like, I think this whole idea of empathy in tech, and in, you know, tech education, it's, and soft skills also, mm-hmm. it's like,
they're not soft though. They're not... extremely hard. And then, you know what, the people get mad when they're like, this is not a well documented thing. And I'm like, well, do you document things? Like, do you treat it the way you should? Because it actually affects people's lives, and like, it can save so many hours of time. And it's like arguably the most underrated skill in tech these days is documentation, and like documentation as a way of teaching. Because like, you can work on frameworks and like, you're like, okay, I'm like stuck. And like, you're stuck on a big problem. And if the framework hasn't documented it, you're like, okay, I guess I'm going to ask on a forum where people might not be very nice. And sometimes people are like, why are you even trying to do that? And it's like, if people just put time into their documentation and really were empathetic with people who are using it, and I don't just mean senior experienced engineers, I mean people who might be using it for their very first dev job, or people who are like, oh, I want to learn how to code, let me use this thing that I've never heard of. But anyways, yeah, I can go on a long rant about how people do not value documentation, and they should.
Oh man, I also recently went to a Write the Docs conference, and what I also really loved about it is that, you know, it wasn't just like, here are the tools that we use to produce documentation, but also, yeah, like a lot of like the soft skills and like practicing empathy, mm-hmm. Not just, you know, for like the readers or users, but also like with your team members. Mm-hmm. So like, it's something that I feel like I'd always known, or like instinctively, like, yeah, that all of this makes sense. But like, it's yeah, documentation is not really a big priority for a lot of places. And also, you know, like the soft skills, like not just the content, but the way in which you present content, I feel like people don't really pay attention or don't realize how much more complex a thing it is.
Yeah, I
could go on. Anyway, so in terms of, I know that you have speaking engagements and all of that sort of stuff. Do you want to tell us a little bit more about, I guess, what you're up to? Like you mentioned, the podcast, the new season is going to be, is it starting up soon, or you're starting recording soon?
We're starting recording soon. I'm hoping probably in the fall. Yeah, it was a very busy like spring for me because I went to 4 conferences in like 8 weeks or like 6 weeks. was very tiring. And then I was like, I'm going to take a break. Then we can start on this computer science stuff again. I think the podcast, season three of the podcast, should be coming out sometime in the fall, hopefully. And I have a bunch of videos that we produced. My friends at The Practical Developer, they have a website called Dev2 and a really funny Twitter account also. They partnered with me and we collaborated on bringing the Base CS series to life in a video series. So there's actually 5 videos that you can watch for free online. And they go into different computer science concepts, and like it's actually me explaining them, and then there are like visuals where you can see me drawing. So those are out to tide you over until the podcast is actually, you know, out there and produced. I'm planning to take it easy and like enjoy the Portland summer before I get set to record a bunch more videos in the fall. And then I will be probably.
Good morning. You are listening to Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join, just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kboo.org or message us on Instagram at @PACUnderground.
Like, starting to speak again, end of the year, early January probably. I had to set a cap for myself this year because I did a lot last year and I was like, you gotta spread out the conferences. Don't put them all at once.
And some of them were international too. Like you were outside of the country.
Yeah, I went to a conference in Medellin in Colombia. I went to one in Paris. There's one in Pittsburgh, and one thankfully was in Portland. That it's always great when there's a Portland-based one. I'm like, this is great. I don't need to get on a plane. I can just be here, and then I get to go home and sleep in my own bed.
Yeah.
But conferences are really great. My one tip is be smart about scheduling them. Don't do what I did.
That makes sense. Also, because you mentioned enjoying the Portland summer. Do you have any favorites, like Portland summer favorites, place to sort of hang out at? Not that we're all going to go there, obviously, but you know, things to do, things to check out.
Yeah. I just really like spending Salt and Straw.
I do like Salt and Straw,
you
but
need to go to 50 Licks.
I have not tried 50 Licks.
I probably should not have publicized this because I love 50 Licks and I love that it's not crowded. And now there's going to be a line because I talked about it. But it's okay. I support local business. It's fine. I want them to do well. I just want to not wait for my ice cream also. It's very, I don't know what my problem is. I'm so selfish. It's beautiful weather, and also I don't want to stand in line for ice cream.
I had heard good things. 50 Licks had been mentioned to me before, but I think I just haven't had the chance to check it out and really... now I should really just go try it. If you think it's better than Salt and Straw.
Oh, I definitely do. Hands down. There's a bunch of like 90 degree days coming up. You just need to like make a little adventure out there.
Yeah.
It's very good. But yeah, I love going out to the coast too. So hopefully do that, especially when it gets hot.
It was my first time actually on the coast about a few weeks ago. I hopped around for like a day thing, first to Manzanita,
mm-hmm.
and then up to Cannon Beach,
mm-hmm.
And then Astoria.
Nice. You should go to Cape Lookout State Park. It's a very small state park, but it's a peninsula that sticks out, a good, you know, mile or 2 miles or something out into the ocean. It's like a 5-mile hike, but it's beautiful, and you can see whales I haven't seen them. I've seen dolphins, which is fine too, I guess. But you can go whale watching there.
Wait, what was the name of the place again?
Cape Lookout State Park.
Cape Lookout.
Okay. There's like a hike that goes like 2.5 miles out to the end of the peninsula and then back. It's pretty good. Yeah. I highly recommend it. It was the first hike I did, I think, out on the coast, and it's still my favorite one. So good.
I'm taking notes. Cape Lookout. Although it does, you know, like, I feel like if I just like have a visual of like a cape and someone looking out, like I would remember.
Yeah, you should. I mean, there's a lot of like hikes and nature. Like, there's a lot of nature out there, and you could be like, oh, she said something, and I just see all these green things on Google Maps. What do I do? So yeah, I think writing it down is smart.
I really do think, though, that the outdoorsy, you know, nature things that we can sort of experience here in the Portland area, that's something that I really have yet to kind of go in on. Mm-hmm. So as a fairly new Portlandian, I really should be working on that. But that's
it's
like
summer now. You can.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can do it like even months after summer. I just love going hiking all the time. It's just so great.
Cool. Let's see. And if our listeners wanted to find out more about your work, what you do, where can they find that?
So I am pretty active, probably more so than I should be, on Twitter. You can keep up with my projects and new things that I publish and produce. At twitter.com, and my handle is Vaidehi Joshi, which is spelled Vaidehi Joshi. It's a long name. Like, I tweet sometimes about llamas, or like, you know, rage about tech, or just be like, oh, look at all these cute heart emojis that I'll, oh, you know what I really like? I love using the star emoji, the starry eye emoji.
The starry eye emoji.
You need to check it out.
Wait, it's a
face with stars instead of hearts.
Oh.
So whenever somebody says something like funny or wonderful or nice, I'll just reply with star eye emojis. So you'll see a lot of that.
Is it new? I know of the heart.
I mean, it's kind of new, but I mean, I've had it for like a couple months, I think. Yeah, I think it probably came out when the avocado thing came out, and everybody loves the avocado emoji, and people forgot about star eye. anyways, you can do the Twitter thing if you want. And if you would like to learn about the Base CS project, you can go to basecs.org, which is spelled BASECS.org. You can find the original project there, and then the Base CS podcast is available at codenewbies.org/basecs. Or you can just Google Base CS and all of these things will come up, because it's such a funny name, and apparently nobody thought to do anything with it. So
it is a clever name. Like, I would say it's a clever name, and also I can vouch for the good Twitter content, guys. So if you want to do the Twitter thing, go for it. Anyway, so I wish we had more time to chat, but unfortunately this is all the time we have. Vaidehi, thank you again so much for being here with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And also, you know, just talking to us about your background and your experience. I personally feel very honored to be chatting with Vaidehi.
Oh,
and
that's so nice.
Yeah, it's really great. I think Vaidehi's work is awesome, so thank you so much. And to our listeners, thank you again for listening to this episode of Pacific Underground. We will catch you again next time.
Pacific Underground on KBOO Community Radio. Just a reminder that our show is on hiatus until May, and until then, we are looking for new members to join the collective. Pacific Underground is the only show by and for Asians and Pacific Islanders in the Pacific Northwest. There is no experience necessary to join. just an enthusiasm for API content and stories through the medium of community radio. If you are Asian or Pacific Islander and are interested in joining, please contact us at pacificunderground@kbu.org or just message us on Instagram at @PacUnderground. See you guys later.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM and streaming on the web, kboo.fm. I'm Don Jacobson, and moving on, we'll be here in just a few minutes right after the news.
KBOO Community Radio.